And joining us right now is Pamela Gela. She is, of course, the woman from Atlas Shrugs. You know and love that website. Her book is called, the newest one, it's called The Obama Administration's War on America, The Post-American Presidency. It's published by Threshold Editions. Coincidentally, the same people who published the one we just did an interview with, A Time to Betray by Riza Khalili. I don't know if you've read that book or not, Pamela.
Not yet. My plate is kind of full.
Yeah, I guess it probably is. Yeah, I understand. I'm in the same situation you are. So tell us a little bit about why you decided to write this book. I think it's pretty obvious, but
I had been researching Obama since late 2007, early 2008, and breaking remarkable stories that the media wouldn't touch, whether it was the tens of thousands of dollars from a Hamas-controlled area in Gaza, or the tens of millions of dollars in foreign campaign contributions, or the phone banks campaigning for Obama in Gaza, or the relationship, the very strange and dangerous relationship that he had with Raila Odinga of Kenya. Story after story, and allegiance after allegiance, alliance after alliance, was just, either swept under the rug or a lie by omission, and the American people were basically sold as one would be sold Coke. He was branded, he was marketed by the best ad agency in the world. And, of course, once he took his presidency, his actions, his policies, both domestically and abroad, may appear to be astounding, but certainly not surprising. But for the American people, it surely was, because he ran as a centrist. So first, I named it the post-American presidency post-American because he is relinquishing American sovereignty in favor of international bodies. And he is dismissive of and almost contemptuous of American exceptionalism. When queried in Europe if he believed in American exceptionalism, he said, well, you know, as much as the Brits believe in British exceptionalism and French exceptionalism and Greek exceptionalism, in other words, nobody is exceptional. And this is patently false. And it strikes at the very heart of what America is, the basic founding principle of America. It was individual rights. And everything great and noble and just and everything that America achieved was a fidelity to that founding principle. And that's what American exceptionalism is. American exceptionalism, really, the translation is individual exceptionalism. And by routing the economy, bankrupting the economy, and subverting the America's rational self-interest to an international agenda, really driven by our enemies, he is presiding over the decline of America, not only presiding over it, but aiding and abetting it.
But didn't he get elected by a large plurality of people who kind of knew coming in, he had said he wanted to equalize people's wealth, and he was known to hang with socialists, he was known for some of the connections that he had to the church, Reverend Wright, where they didn't look too well on white people or Jews or anything like that. Didn't people kind of know where he was coming from when they elected him?
I don't think so. I mean, if they read the blogs, they knew, but how many people are, increasingly more, but, or if they watched Hannity. I mean, he was really the only one. So if they were watching the mainstream ABC, the alphabets and the CNNs, the answer to that question is absolutely not. And anytime something like that reared its ugly head, they would wash it away. So I have to beg to differ. I don't think the American people were at all aware. They were. He ran as a centrist. You weren't allowed to say his middle name. You weren't even allowed to say his middle initial. Or you were a racist, Islamophobic, anti-Muslim bigot.
Well,
and
right now,
when he took office, he proudly declared himself in his first interview with Al Arabiya Television, Barack Hussein Obama, and lauded the Muslim members of his family. Now, his grandmother was a Christian in 2008, and then she was a lifetime Muslim in 2009. There's nothing wrong with that, but the deception is problematic. Why lie? Why are you hiding? Why lie?
Well, it's interesting that more and more Americans now believe that he's of Muslim faith.
Well, I think that people are believing he's a Muslim faith because they're trying to find an explanation for his very pro-Islamic policies. I mean, he favors Islam to the detriment of everything and every other religion. And so maybe they're looking for the easy. You see, I don't know if he's a Muslim. I don't care if he's a Muslim. It's quite frankly, I've never said he was, frankly, irrelevant to me, because whether he is a Muslim or he isn't a Muslim, the bottom line is, what would he be doing differently? And the answer to that is, I don't care what his motive is. His motive is irrelevant to me.
Mm. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, he's here in Martha's Vineyard right now. And there was much written about it on all the papers that he didn't go to church on Sunday.
Oh, it's so silly. Now they're going to do a photo op at church? It's not about that. By their fruits ye shall know them, and so we know Obama. And he's going to have to do things differently. I mean, he's a decidedly anti-American president. He turns on our allies. He has turned on every one of our allies, whether it was the Honduras, whether it was Israel, whether it was the Eastern Europeans, where he abandoned missile defense. He is enabling Iran's nuke, and he's turning to our enemies, who are our enemies, and he's not going to make friends out of people that wish to destroy the West.
I think one of the things that I've been concerned with from day one, and I've talked about it on the air many times, is the freedom of public speech, freedom of speech. I know that the Democrats have tried to make an assault on the radio in terms of equal time. And, of course, Obama has publicly ridiculed Fox as being not even a news agency. And, of course, they also tried to do some takeover stuff on the Internet where they could eliminate websites they didn't like. And, in fact, wasn't something done about yours? Didn't they do something to try to hurt your website at some point?
Yes, I was blocked once or twice. Look, this is a key issue, because this is a basic fundamental principle of this constitutional republic. And freedom of speech is indeed the line in the sand. It's the line in the sand because we are in the war of ideas now. We are in the information battle space. All the bullets and bombs and bloodshed comes as a result of what happens in the information battle space. And freedom of speech is what keeps men free. I will not try to shut up anybody. I don't care if it's the Ku Klux Klan. I don't care if it's a jihadi. I don't care what. Just as long as my ideas can get out there, because I know my ideas are better. But once you restrict freedom of speech, then peaceful men can have no other alternative but to get violent. And I was deeply disturbed that for the first time in U.S. history, the United States of America, under the Obama administration, co-sponsored a resolution at the U.N. with Egypt to restrict free speech, not to defame Islam. This was deeply troubling. They could say, well, it's the U.N. and nobody cares, but he's an internationalist. And he's relinquishing American sovereignty to international law. All of his appointments, whether it's Harold Coe, the legal advisor for the State Department, he is an avowed transnationalist. Sonia Sotomayor is a proud internationalist. Elena Kagan, a proud internationalist. So he's obviously not just talking the talk, but in these appointments, he's walking the walk as well.
Well, you talk about his appointments, the quote-unquote czars. It's amazing the kind of people that are in that administration right now. If you don't know, folks, you got to read the Post-American Presidency to get an edge on this. It's amazing.
I agree. It's all in there. And it's, I equate it to, America's like Helen Keller, and they turned off the lights. I mean, they moved the furniture, and they're like, what happened? Suddenly, the country a year later is radically different. Healthcare has been nationalized, banks have been nationalized, automobile sectors have been nationalized, insurance sectors have been nationalized, the cap and trade is nationalizing of energy, and we're only a year and a half in.
And of course, the cap and trade is not only nationalized of energy, but it's going to destroy business in America to try to placate the third world nations of the world.
Well, that's what Copenhagen, that's in my book, I dissect the agreements from the Copenhagen, the Global Warming Conference, and the Global Poverty Act. All that is, when you read through all the documents, the bottom line is it's redistribution of the wealth on a global scale, with the main recipients being the Islamic world and Africa. That's all it is. And once you sign those treaties, ladies and gentlemen, remember, it supersedes the Constitution. Any treaty with a foreign nation supersedes the Constitution. So people need to really pay attention. This book is the light switch. If you don't know what's going on, this book will explain everything, and you will. It's the tool you will need to move forward to bring us back from the brink or from the abyss, because we're moving at a very scary speed in a very dangerous direction.
The speed is just actually incredible. If you look at what he's done,
yeah,
to this country already. In so quick a nation and so quick a time. And there are many people who I speak with who love what he's done. They think it's wonderful that he's passed the health care bill, and it doesn't seem to bother them that it's going to destroy the entire country. So,
well, it's a pity. There are so many socialist nation failures. There are so many communist nations. I don't know why these people stay here. I mean, we were the only semi-capitalistic system in the world, which is, capitalism is the most benevolent system. It's based on individual rights and one's own, production. What one not producing for somebody else, not enslaving somebody for somebody else. You work so that that man doesn't work. It's the most benevolent system. There are so many. I mean, history is riddled with failed socialist, communist, quote unquote experiments. And I don't know why these people leave one country alone. All you have to do is look at North Korea and South Korea, a thriving democracy versus statism, or East Germany and West Germany before they were united, a completely failed state, a gulag, and a thriving, enormously successful free society. I mean, it's there. And no matter how much they con you with their fancy silver tongue talk about altruism and all this other nonsense and sacrifice yourself. No, do not sacrifice yourself. It is a crime, it is an evil to sacrifice yourself. Because if you produce for yourself and if you produce for your family, you will produce for the greater good that everybody loves to shove down our throats. And believe me, the abundance of America was never made in an era of, doing it for quote-unquote the greater good. America's greatest era of capitalism, which basically was the 19th century into the early 20th century, was when it was its freest. And so we should learn from history, not from these talking heads who know nothing.
Well, I'd find it amazing. I actually spoke with one of the members of the administration regarding the health care law, and I asked them, why would they want to change the best health care system in the world and make it parrot some of the worst in the world? And I said to them, the biggest question is, how can you add 34 million people without adding new doctors? And they had no answers, because they haven't thought any of this out. It's just a program. That's all it is.
They have thought it out. You're going to break the nation. It's Pivens. You're going to bankrupt the nation is what you're going to do. What do you think? We're the world's leading superpower because people think we're cute? We're the world's leading superpower because we are the engine, the global engine of this of the world, and we are the strongest military superpower. That's it. And that's why people hate us. Because we are the prettiest girl at the ball, so to speak. And so, you destroy that, and the world falls into chaos. Plato said that the world is a chaotic place, and that peace is a parenthesis. And I think Obama is anti-Platonic. I think that he thinks that the world is the natural state of the world is peaceful, and if he walks in with that million-dollar smile and that sort of saunters in the room, that they're all going to say, oh, we're going to give up all of our evil ambitions and our, and our imperialistic notions. And it's just, it's poppycock. It's silly, and it's dangerous, and it has to be fought. We have to remove his hammer, and we have to remove his hammer in November.
Well, it's interesting what Reza said to me in the last interview. He's a former Revolutionary Guard in Iran. And he said that all of this Obama stuff, trying to cozy up to these Muslim extremists, there's no way it will work. They're all just laughing at him.
Yes, I agree.
And he's very worried about Iran and the lack of. He said that the United States should be having a leadership position in destroying this nuclear ambition and restoring, getting the clerics out and restoring us civilian leadership in Iran.
Listen, he blew it in Iran last summer. If you recall, that was our opportunity. Millions of Iranians took to the streets. I mean, these were really brave, scary brave people to take to the streets and meet with nothing, with their bare flesh meet bullets and bricks and bats. And their families were arrested. And these people, they were men and women, were raped to death in the jails. And the only way the story was getting out was vis-a-vis blogs like mine and via Twitter. People on the ground, they were Twittering. And so many of those Twitterers, like Persian Kiwi, we never heard from again.
Right.
We never heard from again. Risked their lives to get the information out, to get the pictures out. And he stood there. He stood there, Obama, and did nothing. Nothing. That will be a stain on American history for as long as we exist.
Well, Risa was talking about that. He was also talking.
They were chanting at Obama. They were chanting, "You are either with us or against us."
Mm-hmm.
They were chanting at Obama. That was our shot.
Mm-hmm. No, you're absolutely correct. And he talked about that because he was there, and he spoke about that, and he spoke about that whole movement and how it was destroyed. And he talked about the prisons there and some of the things that are happening. It's unbelievable, beyond shocking.
Beyond shocking.
Yeah, and this book is beyond shocking too, because you have actually, but while this is out, I'm reading today on another person's blog, it's someone named Rosenthal or something, how you've caused this major racist situation.
And
the interesting thing is that I guess that you haven't had your rally yet about 911 yet.
I had a rally on June 6th. And there were 10,000 people that showed up. But this is the contempt that the media has for the American people. They're making the Ground Zero mosque story all about me, that I ginned up the people, that I ginned up the racism, that if it wasn't for me, are they crazy? I'm asking you a question. Are they insane? First of all, who has that kind of power? I'm a blogger, for God's sake. Second of all, I've been doing this for 6 or 7 years, blogging different stories. I didn't make this happen. This is an offense. This is an insult. This is visceral. The more people that hear about it, the more astounded they are and insulted and offended by a 15-story mega mosque in a building that was partially destroyed by the plane that went into the towers. That building is Ground Zero. Anyone that tells you it's 600 feet is pulling your chain. It is Ground Zero. It was hit in the attack.
Well,
I didn't make the story. How do you do that?
Pamela, I got to say that there's nobody that can argue this, that this should be there, because there are people out there saying, well, the Muslims, they're reaching out to us. They're reaching out the wrong way. I mean, you don't reach out with a hatchet. You reach out with a handshake. So the whole point is that they have a right to build a mosque anywhere they want. But if they really want to get along with people, if they really want to show that they're free, loving people and they're peaceful people, then they can move a few blocks down the road.
Yeah. Yes, I agree.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, there's nobody, I can't understand anybody defending these people at all, including our beloved president, who got out there like he did when he talked about the Cambridge police being stupid, he immediately made some comment that he had to retract 2 days later.
Right, that was a knee-jerk. That was 1, 2, 3, a knee-jerk reaction. I mean, that's where it's indicative of where he stands. I mean, the rush to race. And once again, to me, that's sowing the seeds of division in this country. Whereas America, in her eternal hopefulness and her naivety, elected Barack Hussein Obama to close the book on race, to say, look, you see, we don't care. We don't care. It doesn't matter. We're beyond that. No other country in the world could have done it. And that's what they got. They got a kick in the head. Oh, you elected a black president to show that you're not racist? Well, you know what? You're a racist. You're a racist if you don't agree with me. You're a racist if you don't back my destructive policies against this country. You're a racist if anything you say doesn't. It's fascism.
It's unbelievable.
When the speaker
of the House says
racism with the mosque. First of all, Islam is not a race, but we white split hairs, and it's got nothing to do with that. It has to do with where's the reciprocity? We have to be so sensitive to the Muslim world. You can't run the Danish cartoons. You can't put Muhammad on Comedy Central. You can't, hair trigger sensitivity. A Danish cartoon, a guy with a turban on his head with a bomb sticking out. Embassies were burned. Hundreds of people were murdered because it's an insult. But a giant mosque at Ground Zero, that's okay. The world is upside down.
It is upside down. It's exactly the expression I've used on the air many times, that the world's upside down. One of the things that I did find astounding was that the Speaker of the House would say that, you know, anybody who opposes this 911 should be investigated, opposes the mosque should be investigated. It's beyond words. One of the things I wanted to ask you, and I assume that you're Jewish. 78% of Americans voted, of Jewish Americans, voted for Obama, when clearly, even if people went on his website when he was running, there was anti-Semitism all over the website, and anything else was cleaned up, but that was left on for a long, long time. I would think that Jewish people would get it, but I know many people who are leading Jewish people who still love him and think that he's wonderful for the Jewish people.
Well, those people are, it's not a Jewish issue. Those people aren't Jewish. They are married to their liberal dogma. They are married. They worship at the Church of Human Secularism. Their religion is politics. It's not Judaism. Because the Jews that believe in Hashem, the Jews that are religious, they didn't vote for Obama. Trust me. They didn't. But the liberal Jews, listen, they've been the scorn of the Jewish people for centuries. I mean, they are our worst. I am Jewish, and I can say this unequivocally, that the Jewicidals are our worst enemy. Our worst enemy. And they are the face of the enemy. They put the Jews up like props, like, look, he's a Jew. And, you know, that doesn't mean anything to me. My coalition has nothing to do with race, creed, color, religion. My coalition is individual rights, and and life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is the basic premise on which all the well from which all things spring.
Now, the only hope for America that I can see, and by the way, I am a former liberal Democrat who wasn't convention delegate for Deval Patrick in Massachusetts, who's almost another Obama here.
Yeah.
But I've seen the light, and I think that the only hope we have is November. If the Republicans, and I'm not a big Republican fan either, by the way, but if the Democrats don't lose a little bit of those chairs and don't have to negotiate a little bit before they do things, we're in trouble.
I agree, and I thank you so much for having me on your show to talk about the book, because people need it.
They do. They need to read it.
Yeah.
And they need to understand. They should go over your website too, atlasshrugs.com as well.
Yeah.
And check it out. I'm on your email list, and every day I get some very interesting stories to look at, which is always kind of fun.
Yeah, it's never a dull moment because the media won't cover it.
That's a real problem, though. I don't understand it, actually, that why they wouldn't do their job. And they see that Fox has become so popular enough that Obama's administration had to attack it. But I mean, they're the only network even considering both sides of the equation.
Yeah, well, yes, exactly. And I have my problems with Fox, but they're the only game in town, actually.
Yeah. It'd be nice if there was actually a real right-wing network out there, but there aren't.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Maybe someone should invent one. There you go. Maybe that'll be your next thing, Pamela.
I'll work on it. As soon as I can raise some money, I'll work on it.
The book is called The Post-American Presidency. It's Pamela Geller's book, along with Robert Spencer, and it's from Threshold Editions. You can buy it anywhere. And also check out atlasshrugs.com. Thanks so much for coming on, and God bless America.
Thanks, Mark.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.